Welcome to the Blister Podcast, a program dedicated to interesting people, the great outdoors, and a bunch of other stuff we like. I'm Jonathan Ellsworth, the founder of Blister, and you can check us out online at blisterreview.com, where, among other things, we publish in-depth and totally honest reviews of outdoor sports equipment. This week on the podcast, we talk to Darren Rawls. And simply put, Darren is the man. He is the most decorated American male downhill and Super G skier in history, with 12 World Cup race wins, 28 World Cup podium finishes, and 7 U.S. national titles. And after a dominant racing career, Darren transitioned to skier cross competition, then transitioned again a few years later to big mountain skiing, where he filmed with both Warren Miller and Teton Gravity Research. In short, few, if any, skiers have exhibited the versatility and had the broad-ranging success that Darren has. Then in 2011, Darren started the Rawls Bonsai Tour, and the sixth edition of the Bonsai Tour takes place this weekend. So we talked to Darren about his past, the present, and why he considers the Bonsai Tour to be the purest form of racing. This episode of the Blister Podcast is presented by New Belgium Brewing Company. Our audio engineer, Justin Bob, and I are once again enjoying the latest release from New Belgium, a tangerine IPA called Citradelic. And this week, Justin is enjoying his Citradelic with some food he brought over, an edamame pesto pasta. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, wow, that Justin sounds like a super hipster, you'd be right. Okay, no you wouldn't. Justin is about the farthest thing from a hipster I can imagine, but Justin did say about his Citradelic, quote, "It really accentuates the pine nuts out of the pesto." Now, I don't really know what that means, but it sounds like a pretty good thing. So go home, try some edamame pasta and Citradelic, because it's J-Bob approved. And go to newbelgium.com to check out Citradelic and all of New Belgium's other beers. Okay, now let's get to our conversation with Darren Rawls. Well, I'm happy to be talking today with Darren Rawls. Darren, you must know if you're listening to this podcast, Darren is kind of a legend in the field. We might even call him a bit of an OG. Darren has kind of seen it all, and we're happy to be talking with him today. Just in front of a really big weekend for Darren, two things are going on in particular, the Rawls Bonsai Tour, and then also the Tahoe Junior Freeride Series. And so happy today to talk to Darren about both of those things and about a bit about his background and some of the other things going on these days in the world of skiing. So Darren, nice to be talking to you today.
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah. Pleasure to be on your podcast show here. And yeah, it is a big weekend. I've taken on top of Bonsai events, this Tahoe Junior Freeride Series, three events, two at Alpine, one at Squaw Valley. And this weekend's the national. So it's the IFSA, International Free Skiing Association's national event at Alpine Meadows. And I was just up on the hill. I mean, basically just got off the snow about an hour ago and going through the venue with a bunch of the head coaches, our TD, just making sure kind of like what we're going to have in play and what we're going to take out as far as some of the exposure. And yesterday was like pretty much 10 hours of loading the event truck up and getting things kind of like ready for Bonsai at Kirkwood. So I've been able to pass the torch to all the TJFS like crew, and they run a really tight ship, and all the judges, and we've all met and done our due diligence there. And now it's moving on to my own tour, the Rawls Bonsai Tour at Kirkwood.
Yeah, and tell me about, say more about the Bonsai Tour. I mean, this is pretty wild and pretty awesome event. How did this thing come to be, and when did it start?
Well, you know, it's just actually my first, it's just basically what I did growing up, like racing my buddies down.
Yeah.
For us, we didn't have parks that were built. It was more just natural terrain, and you're firing down the mountain trying to find a fast line, but always hitting like as many jumps and bank turns, compressions, and all kinds of stuff you can pinpoint. It's like a downhill, you know, motocross track on skis, basically. And Tahoe is unbelievable terrain. It's just, you know, these wide open big bowls to like gullies and just natural kind of rollers and airs. And so I think it's the most pure, I mean, it's the most pure form of racing there is, because it's head to head four at a time. So it takes this like ski racing aspect, a little free ride, and then border cross, ski cross sort of format, where there's four at a time out of the gate racing to the bottom, and top two advance the next round, and then you come out at the end of the day with you know, champ and first loser, third place, fourth place in the final heat. But it's, yeah, it's, to me, it's, Red Bull did this event in Austria, and when I was still ski racing, which I retired from ski racing on the World Cup in 2006, mm-hmm. and I was like, I'm doing this event. And the next year they stopped running it. Ah. They did like 3 years and they stopped it. But it was like an eight guy race, top to bottom, on those gnarly hills. It took them like 6 minutes. And to me, I've always wanted to do different things in the sport, and that's kind of why I ended up retiring at an early age, really, because I wanted to go out on my own terms, go out healthy, go out winning. I had three World Cup downhill wins that year, a Super G win, a second in GS. So it was one of my best seasons, but you know, it was the Olympics, and I had a horrible kind of Olympic experience. But you know, just, we had a ski issue that pretty much derailed a chance for me to win the downhill. And I went in there, was the last winner on that track. I had the fastest training run time, and race day, like 40 seconds before I kicked out of the starting gate, I had skis changed on me, and it was just a bad call by my service tech from Atomic. And I skied well. It's just, you go back to the clock and you look at all the split times, and I was like 2-3 tenths out, where the skis really made a difference. In one section, which was icy and hard, it was like 26 seconds, and I won that by almost 4 tenths.
Wow.
So I knew I was skiing well, but I pretty much lost the medal because of, even the win because of some skis. But that's the way it goes. I mean, it's a sport where I'm not going to use it as an excuse. I tried as hard as I could. So my ski tech, we just messed up, and the wrong call was made. But yeah, it's just, it still haunts me a little bit, because I wanted to go out with an Olympic medal, especially, you know, win and downhill.
Yeah.
But I kind of remounted and ended up winning a Super G at the end of the season, and I said, okay, I mean, that's good for me, and I want to go into ski cross and big mountain skiing, and had some fun doing that as well, and been doing that since 2007. So it's 10 seasons this year that I've been away from the World Cup, and it's pretty crazy, because I went back to Beaver Creek this year to watch, and then I ran the Strife, the Honicom, did some Red Bull like POV work with this 360 degree camera that will have this like really sweet edit coming out next year on the Strife, and you know, I'm still tapped into the race world, and just trying to I'm taking less risk these days, but it's still fun to do it all.
What was your background? I know you started skiing at a very, very early age. But was that always very race focused, or were you banging gates but spending as much time as you could also, free skiing?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up skiing in Tahoe, and if there was good skiing, powder day, like we would blow off training for sure and go out and ski. But I love ski racing, and the fact that I could push myself, I was really competitive. It was a challenge. It was always, you go to different like resorts and you have a different hill to ski on. Just like skiing in general, it's like, it's rarely ever the same repetitive thing. You know, it's, there's always something that's a different challenge out there with the weather, terrain, all that. But yeah, ski racing took a hold of me. Probably around like 11, 12 years old, I started getting into it in Tahoe. And then when I was like 13, doing actually pretty well, then I actually went back to Vermont to school at the ski academy, because there's nothing in that like realm to like challenge both, you know, someone that's like, I mean, I wanted a good my parents really were like, hey, we want you in a good school, but if you could also ski, it'd be great. And looks like Vermont's the place to go. So I actually checked it out and went over there for a year and stayed there for all of high school. But yeah, ski racing was number one focus, but I was always kind of drawn to free skiing, and any chance I had, I was free skiing. And looking back, like my breakout race, my first two World Cup downhill ones were back to back in Norway. But 5 days before I went over there, I was skiing with Johnny Molesley and Shane McConkey, and we were skiing like two epic days of powder, just perfect conditions in Tahoe, and that kind of got me just feeling good, like in the mood to like have fun, and I was all about trying to charge, you know.
Yeah.
On the downhill skis, and it just like I had pretty much my perfect. If I ever had a race that was close to perfect, it was my second downhill win, my victory there in Kvitfjell, Norway, and I attribute that a lot to just like that vibe I had that whole week of skiing with those guys in Tahoe. So I've always kind of like said, oh, I need to go to Alaska now. I need to do this. You know, I'm gonna have a chance, and this is gonna help my ski racing. And you know, in Europe, whenever I had a chance to have any time off, I was skiing in St. Anton, Kitzbühel. You know, the Zalkensee resort, like all these like resorts around Austria. I felt really good over there, but I wouldn't take time off just like going to check out, you know, the sights. I was like out tearing it up and trying to have some fun with some locals on the ski.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, what a time in Tahoe. You, Molesley, and McConkey just kind of ripping around together. You've got to have sort of one good story to share, either drawn with the both of them, time out with both of them, or your favorite Shane story or Molesley story.
Yeah, there's some stuff I probably want to leave off the docket here. Yeah, I mean, hang out with the golden boy, Johnny. I mean, that's he won in 98, and this is like, This is 2000. So just, I mean, he was like living large at that point. And you know, I spent a lot of time on the road. I never really hung out with those guys too much. I saw Shane actually more in the summertime than I did in the winter. And because I was hardly ever home, that was a rare opportunity. And, you know, I ended up skiing a whole different Squaw Valley those 2 days than I ever did my whole life. Like, I'm always like looking for big speed, kind of like open like terrain. And Shane was just like the billy goat, and he got us into all kinds of crazy terrain. And I was just, it was opened my eyes up to like what's possible and fun stuff. But it's, I mean, we had, Shane and I had some, you know, a great time camping out Stampede, this reservoir just north of Truckee, and with Sherry and my wife, Michelle, and just rad, like some good times, you know, just like getting away from the mountains. But those, I mean, Shane, we definitely miss him. He did a lot for the sport and just a lot for, you know, community, inspiring people and people he never even like knew, or no one that like, I mean, never knew him. We're inspired by him, you know, just, but he was a fun guy that had a great time and was always messing around, but he was a professional, and the kid was insane on skis, like stuff he'd pull off like on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But, and I still, and Johnny right now and I, it's kind of, we're back kind of like staying in contact more than ever because our kids are about the same age and they're racing together, Tahoe League, and so I'll see him like at some of these races, so it's the next generation is what it's about, really. And I'm just trying to hold on to my piece of the, you know, the action up in the mountains and still, you know, really appreciative and lucky to be able to hang on to, you know, like a career in skiing.
No, that's great. So it's fair to say, right? I mean, the free ride, you know, this Tahoe Junior free ride series, and kind of these free ride comps in general. I mean, when you were a little kid, this stuff wasn't available to you, right? I mean, this is a newer development.
Yeah, the other thing was just, it was like hot dogging, freestyle, bump skiing, like Molesley, and or racing.
Yeah,
and so you know, we had some sweet like sort of like inter-squad events where we'd have like big air contests, but it was pretty much about like just trying to go big and you know, there weren't too many tricks besides a few mule kicks or twisters, spread, that kind of stuff, daffies, you know. Now it's just insane to see what's going on. And this one kid I'm really hyped on right now, he's, I mean, I spent a lot of time at Sugar Bowl. I'm the resort ambassador at Sugar Bowl Resort and at the Academy, which is really rad now for this area in Tahoe. It's, if I had this Sugar Bowl Academy when I was growing up, that's where I'd be instead of having to travel to Vermont. But it's really focused on racing, and they have an incredible free ride program. And this kid, Xander Goldman, he's just on fire right now, just racking up wins and third at Junior Worlds this year. I got him on the Atomic program, and just really kind of, he's super humble and appreciative and hard worker and great example for his peers and kids like my boy that just are really amped up to see him on the hill. And it's fun to be part of this TJFS crew now and kind of as the event promoter. And I got kids like that come up to me, like the 17-year-old snowboarder, like came up to me, Dylan Zellers, and he's like, "Hey, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing, and thanks for saving our event series." And to me, that goes a long ways. I mean, you expect something like that from a parent or a coach.
Yep.
But when you have these younger kids, like these teenagers, just coming up to you and saying thank you, it goes a long ways. And you know, it's with the Bonsai Tour, it's 18 years old and up, and I've had trouble like convincing insurance companies to let me go with a youth division. Well, and it's, you know, because it is pretty wild, but we have a great track record. This is our sixth season, and, you know, we've haven't had any, like, serious injuries or stuff where we've had insurance, you know, claims. And I can knock on wood. I'm really proud of that. I want to keep it safe, but I want to, you know, people learn, like, what they're made of and get them out of their comfort level. And
Yeah. That's
exactly what you see some of these top guys, these kids in the free ride series doing. They're impressive. Like it's killing. And I'm kind of bummed because I want to be around for this weekend to check out the freeride event at Alpine, but I'm over at Kirkwood for Bonsai. But you know, I've seen a lot of the local kids, and I want to see like that national level and the kids from Utah, Colorado, like the Northwest and out east. And it's gonna be fun. It's going to be fun to check in and see how things are going this weekend on both sides. So if anybody's listening, it's in Alpine Meadows or Tahoe, and you're in North Lake, go to Alpine, check out the IFSA Alpine National. And then if you're in South Lake, go to Kirkwood and check out our Rouse Bonsai Tour. And it's going to be going off on either end of the lake.
Yeah, two pretty sweet options. So big question, if you know, let's say you were a 10-year-old kid today. You'd kind of have to pick, you know, route A or route B, right? I mean, continue with racing or start.
I hate this question right here, Jonathan. This is a tough one. I mean,
well, but it's an important one, I think, right?
Yeah.
Because I think it'll kind of lead to my next question, which is
for me, I'm saying because it's a hard one for me to like to say. But I think what you're going to ask me is if I go to free ski or go into the race direction, right?
Yep.
It's like racing's tough. It's a grind, you know. It's not like, and it's hard. I mean, it's when you get a free ski and you have a little more freedom and you go out and hit cliffs and just ski a good line and you got to be charged up. It's a pretty sweet community that rallies around everybody. Mm-hmm. But racing isn't like quite like that. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Looking back at what I've done, I think having a foundation in skiing or ski racing,
yep,
with that technique and just being strong and like that mentality, it's helped me out tremendously in the free ski world. And look at my generation just in front of me, like Kent Kreitler, Brant Moles, Shane McConkey, Jeremy Nobis, all those guys are like killing it in the free ride big mountain scene,
yep,
which that's more my style. Like we're from a race background.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just even guys like Reggie Crist, I grew up skiing with him, and Zach Crist on the U.S. ski team. They're from Sun Valley, and they're the guides. You know, they guide in all over the world, you know, Japan and in South America and in Sun Valley and just all over the place in Alaska. It's like they have a great foundation, you know, of skiing from racing, and they're incredible free skiers. And, you know, it's just, I would go back. If I did it again, I'd go back and ski race for sure. And I don't know, I'm kind of reliving that choice right now through my kids. I got twins, a boy and a girl. They're 8 years old. And my girl, unfortunately, has been out for 6 weeks. She broke her leg. So she's been on crutches and just kind of come back from that. And my boy, he's like, he loves free skiing. He loves jumping. He just jump hunts all over the mountain. That's number one. But he just started ski racing. And I think it's great because it gives him a good, like, solid foundation. He just won his first race last weekend at Heavenly, and he was just amped. And, like, yeah, you know what? Winning's one thing, but effort and just having fun is the priority. So that's what I hope to instill. And then, like, I think ski racing does that, you know, it gets you really disciplined, and then you can go out and have fun.
So you said that you are, I mean, you're clearly still very tuned into what's happening on the ski racing scene. Who do you enjoy personally, you know, watching most these days? What skiers on the race side of things are you finding particularly impressive?
Well, you know, I'm always pulling for an American, always pulling for somebody that's like out of the hometown, and Travis Ganong. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a phenomenal year last year, had his breakthrough year, won a World Cup downhill. He was second in World Championships in Beaver Creek. And, you know, he's gone through some injuries this year with a bone bruise on his knee, and he's been struggling. So it's kind of hard. I mean, it's how it goes, ups and downs. But when he's on fire, like, it's fun to watch him because he's super solid. And just 2 years ago, he started taking risk. He would ski really careful and strong and be like fifth in the Olympics in Sochi and all that. But I'm like, man, if you just let it go a little more and just get a little loose out there, you're going to be fast. And that's kind of where he found that last season and was putting it together. And this year, it's just, you know, when you're not feeling good and you land up a jump and you have a shocking, like, pain that goes through your leg, it sucks. It holds you back, and you don't have that confidence. But, you know, I mean, the most impressive guy this whole season has been Axel Lund Svindal, Norwegian.
Yep.
Winning three downhills in a row, I think it was, and just on fire, super G's. You know, unfortunately, I was in Kitzbühel. I did a little POV run for Red Bull Media House, just a 360-degree shoot. So I was back on the track, sweating it, but to get a chance to catch up with all these guys. I mean, I used to race with Svindal.
Yep.
And be able to talk to him about how things are going, and you know, he was just mentally on such a strong, just ride. I mean, he was the guy they could just look at somebody and make him like just back down almost. You had that much confidence, and people just like, oh man, I hope I can. I mean, he's pretty much the favorite today, and you know, it reminds me of a guy like Hermann Meyer in my era.
Yep.
But Svindal went down, crashed in Kitzbühel this year, and he's out for the season, so it's kind of a shame. But, you know, it's just another, like, I mean, Steve Nyman, he's been on fire the last two races. He got third at the in Korea, South Korea, where they are going to hold the Olympics in 2018. They're in the downhill, and he just got second in Chamonix. So it's he's right in there, so it's fun to watch him. And he's a big dude, and he kind of gets a little off balance and, you know, knocked around a little bit. But he was just, the last two races, he's been skiing so tight and just like looking super solid. And he actually had a mistake, and he lost about 4 or 5 tenths at the bottom in Korea right in the last section. He had a chance to win that race, so it's great. But you know, there's just so many good guys. And Kjetil Jansrud, Norwegian, that's basically taken over since Svindal's absence with injury. Yeah. And the Norwegian team's really strong. I've never been interested in slalom before, like, you know, but this last couple of years with Marcel Hirscher and this Norwegian, Henrik Kristoffersen, they're just dueling back and forth, and they've been awesome to watch too. So tech and speed. And then, you know, another girl, like on the girl side, obviously Lindsey Vonn.
Yeah.
I pay attention to the girls too, what they're doing, but she's just, you know, cracking down on Ingemar Stenmark's all time win record, and she's going to pass it. I know it. She's going to get it soon, and probably next year. Yeah. But, and then Mikaela Shiffrin just dominating so hard this season.
Yep.
And then having an injury with her knee, and then no one really knew how long it was going to be. And I think a couple of weeks ago, I saw her doing some really basic edge drills, almost like in a wedge, you know, skiing on super slow, getting a feel for the snow, just kind of doing some like super simple drills, and then she comes back in her comeback slalom race and wins.
Yeah, crazy.
Like, jeez, you know. So I don't know, Americans. I'm loving it because we're pretty much every race. We're getting on the podium, and I mean, another big loss was Ted Ligety this year. Went out with injury, but you know, just we don't have a lot of depth like a lot of the other teams do. Mm-hmm. But we have superstars, you know, and it's kind of always been like that.
Yeah,
so it's still awesome to be around the team, and I like to rap with the coaches and go in the ski rooms and ski ask the you know how the athletes are doing with the ski techs, and I get really kind of more just like sucked in the race world than anything. You know, I have a chance to get back into it, and it's easy to be removed when you're not in the scene. But
so, do you have a kind of is there a favorite racer who you find yourself just in awe from a technique perspective? I mean, we've talked about how big a component the mental game is, and the confidence game in this stuff. But do you find yourself just watching and isolating, you know, bracketing kind of the mental game part of this and thinking about the technique where you just think, man, this guy or this girl, you know, you just want to sit there and rewind the video or something. Anybody like that stand out?
Marcel Hirscher. I mean, he's, you know, the guy's, he's a total technician. He is strong, and it's just fun to watch him ski GS.
Yeah.
I mean, I started off as a GS Super G skier, got more into downhill, and then Super G, and then GS came back a little bit later on. But, yeah, I think that just watching him ski GS, even like that Super G race in Beaver Creek, he won that one. He was taking the tighter line than most guys. It was impressive to watch. He's strong. You can just tell he's really strong. He puts in the time and he's prepared. And so that guy, and then there's, I like kind of like that cowboy style a little bit of, Interhofer, this Italian guy. Mm-hmm. And he's always just like on the edge and just pushing it. And he's been on the podium a couple times this year and just good guy. And then, even this, you know, the last race I watched, Chamonix, obviously if you win a race, you're doing well, but this Italian Dominic Paris, and he was the first time I went back to Kitzbühel after I retired was in 2013, and he won that year. And then I got to know him pretty well because we're staying in the same hotel, actually. And you have this sort of like good connection with especially the Honeycomb winners. Like, I've got to know those guys a lot, and we're a pretty strong like band of, you know, athletes. Like, doesn't matter if you're from the U.S. or not. Like, DJ Kush and I are really good friends, and I got to be good buddies with Dominic Paris, and just when he's on fire, the guy is insane. Like, he technically just solid as a rock. And if you watch that Chamonix downhill from last weekend, like, yeah, it was impressive the way he was skiing.
Switch.
So, but just, you know, I like a lot of different styles, so I can't really just pick one guy, but
yeah,
it's fun to watch them all.
Switching gears, you know, as big mountain skiing and free skiing is gaining in popularity, do you think that free ride should be considered for future Olympics?
That's hard for me to say. I mean, just, you know, just once like snowboarding and like half pipe and slope style were in the Olympics, I mean, everybody's like, yeah, let's keep it free. There's, you know, keep the word free in there, you know, mm-hmm. not competition, not racing. But I mean, I love what these guys are doing, and I think it's awesome, but I've never been a judge sport kind of guy as an athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, I like racing motocross, like ski racing. It's basically you come across the finish line first, you're the fastest time. You know, it's easy to win. And the judging side, it's tough. I mean, to be fair every time. But pretty much like the top guys are coming out, you know, as the cream of the crop and showing the results. So I think it'd be great for the sport. I think it's amazing part of like skiing. The free ride, big mountain stuff, and I mean, why not? It's gonna for the Olympics. I mean, there's some stuff you got to change with the times. And this is hot right now. And there's so many kids. Like these Tahoe Junior Freeride Series events are pulling in 160 kids to sign up.
Yep.
You know, 11 to 14 and then 15 to 18 bracket. And there's first timers are just figuring it out. And there's guys that are pretty seasoned at 17 years old that are just super impressive. I mean, the next generation is, I'm blown away how good they are.
Agreed.
And, you know, it'd be definitely something that'd be really exciting to watch because I love watching like the pipe and slope style X Games and the Olympics. And to me, natural terrain, big mountain skiing is on the free side, the free skiing side aspect is a step above. I mean, it's just kind of what I grew up doing. So, and what I do a little bit now. So why not? Yeah. give these big mountain free riders a chance at the Olympic glory.
Okay, cool. We end with a why not. Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that comes around, but I totally agree with you. I think we have a comp coming up at Taos and just had a junior comp at Taos and I think this next one that's coming, I think the thing was filled up in the first 90 seconds. The registration was filled in about 90 seconds. So yeah, I think we're seeing that demand and I hope it keeps going.
Tell me why. I mean, I know that that happens, but tell me why I can't fill up my bonsai event in 90 seconds. Like it's kind of weird because I'm, you know, I don't know if it's the parents that kind of like lock their kids in and commit. My bonsai is, it's just people don't show up and commit to like the last day really. Like I have a third of the signups right now, what we're probably going to have. And it's the same way every year. I get a little stressed out. It's like, hey, I need competitors, mm-hmm. you know, to like run an event, but people don't commit to this. And if I knew, you know, the way to go about it and get these people to lock in, I do it. But I think, you know, it's a lot of like the bonsai competitors are just regular guys and girls with jobs and have all these like, you know, they're not really locked in on schedules. And
yeah,
I'm pulling in like engineers and bartenders and just local skiers and guys that are working as coaches and just a huge variety. And there's, I don't know. I would love to see us max out like 120 entries in 90 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. And I mean, we just talked about it a little bit ago that it does seem like kids have these kind of two set courses these days, right? Like if you're really into skiing, well, have you already committed to kind of a free ride comp schedule or have you already committed to a racing schedule, right?
Yep.
And I loved what you said early in this conversation about you take the bonsai race to be the purest form of racing. That actually really resonated, right? That, you know, forget grooming everything out perfectly. Let's just
rock. There's no grooming. It's
yeah.
all
yeah. So there's something I think you know, I think the more that is kind of understood, it's like this is raw and this is real and this is like you said, this is what we were doing when we were little kids, racing top to bottom. You know, you can leave the Lycra at home if you want and like let's just go charge.
Yeah, we don't allow race suits in the bonsai. So it's just more like that free ride kind of everyday mentality. And yeah. It's like skiing something top to bottom on the mountain with good flow and fast. And you're kind of battling three other, you know, competitors side by side. And it's fun. It's like I've always liked that aspect of moto and then ski cross where you're trying to anticipate what the other like competitor is going to be doing, you know, on your in front of you, to the side of you or behind
yeah.
you. You got to kind of, you're not going down for the fastest time. You just got to be ahead of that next, you know, the next three guys.
Yeah.
But it's, there's different, you know, tactics. And I look at a course, I'm like, okay, this is the fastest line, but if I'm behind some guy right here, how am I going to like reel them in and make the pass? Like, you got to really kind of like dissect it and sometimes hold back and just wait. And then like, here's the opportunity, get close, and then just try and get the draft and go and make a move. And that's what I love about it, because you're off the cuff. You're trying to make decisions and you have a plan, but then, you know, your plan's hardly ever working out. You just got to improvise on the way down. And that's what I like about it, because it's quick judgment calls with good skiing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so, yeah, it's not merely anticipating and reading terrain. It's reading the people you're skiing against or riding against. And, I mean, if you watch videos of the Banzai, you know, you see, right at the end, right approaching the finish line, two snowboarders taking each other out. And so it's more than 3D, right? It's like 4D or something.
Ski racing, any competition gives you those butterflies and it makes you feel kind of like these crazy, you know, swings of emotions.
Yeah.
And you don't get that when you're just out cruising around and not pushing yourself. And
right.
That's why I've always liked being competitive, I think. And still get the, you know, those juices flowing these days. And I compete in the last one at Sugar Bowl, so I'll pretty much run this whole show at Kirkwood, do a qualifying run, just have some fun on the course because they're super fun to ski, and then do the same thing at Sugar Bowl, but I take on the three top guys for one last run, like a $5,000 winner-takes-all run, just to get some good hype there. And
so is that so right?
So far, I haven't lost. So
see. Wait. And you're doing that again this year?
Yeah, it's basically the after the final like heat, we have a little break, and it's like the super final comes up, and I jump in and get in the gate with these young rippers, see if I can still hang.
And so you're undefeated so far.
Yep.
All right, pressure's on, man.
It is. It's always on, but it gives me a little something to kind of work for. You know, it's just. It keeps me kind of a little more focused. Now I'm thinking like, oh man, I got to start stretching, kind of like getting ready. I got one more week pretty much to get ready for this thing.
Yeah.
But it gets harder and harder every year. But I think when you put that pressure on yourself, you kind of, I don't know, just recruit a little more, focus a little more, just keeps you sharp.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's cool.
Sharp and young. I just wanted to see clean racing. Like, yeah, in the first couple turns, you're going to see some battles, you know, some guys like knocking each other around and some elbows. But if there's any blatant move to like deviate from the natural line, the race line, and knock somebody wide, or like just going like just a total takeout move, like boom, they're out, disqualified and getting the black flag. So, and we've had to do that a couple times. And I think we're making like a, you know, we're sticking to our guns and our rules, and you don't get away with stuff like that, but we still want to see some hard racing. There's a lot of rubbing for sure. Rubbing's right.
Favorite memory of yours from one of these past Banzai events?
I think, it's pretty cool having your own sister racing the events and you know, the guys are talked about a lot more than the girls. And there's this girl, Shelly Robertson, former US ski team freestyler. She's won a Freeride World Tour event. She comes in and battles with my sister. And my sister has a race background, and she was on the CU Boulder like team when they won NCAAs. And she's a competitor. She's scrappy. And she was behind Shelly in the last pitch at Sugar Bowl, Silver Belt Banzai, and in the final. And Shelly was just like, Shannon got the whole shot. Shelly passed her. Shannon was like right there on her heels, and Shelly checked up a little bit just to be safe on this like last pitch. And Shannon just like just saw the blood in the water and went for it. And she got in the draft, and I mean, 20 feet from the finish line, made the pass.
Wow.
And it was impressive. It just came down to the line. And we've had a number of those. We have GoPros on either side of the finish line for photo finishes, and there's some stuff that's super close, you know, like X Games this year in border cross, like there were some really like tight races. And what I love is like seeing the race come down to like the last like stretch.
Yeah.
And it sucks when you have like a runaway guy, this kid, Kyle Coxon from Snowbird, Utah or Salt Lake. And he's been just owning the tour the last couple of years. I want to see some guys come out, and I love the guy. he's super humble, some guy you want to win. But I want to see some, like, I want to see it mixed up a little bit, and I want to see some guys, you know, push him and beat him fair and square in one race to really see what he can do the next race.
Yeah.
So it's, we have so many good, like, close calls. I think that one between Shelley Robertson and my sister Shannon was, goes down as like one of the best moments at the end. It was the final race at Sugar Bowl and the final, heat. And so that was awesome.
And hey, so you are, I mean, is it best to just call you the founder of the Rolfs Banzai Tour, the director of the,
yeah, pretty much care? Like, it's, I say founder and, you know, event promoter. It's, you know, to hold on to that for the last 5 years. So
no, I think that's great. I think you have to keep,
I do have, that title of Banzai Master right now. So
nice.
I got the gold bib, got Rolfs on there, Banzai Master. And that's kind of just what I try and like uphold. And, you know, the kid Kyle Coxon has won the last 2 years and no one's been able to beat him. He hasn't been able to keep up in the super final with me. So I kind of still feels good, but I know he's feeling confident and he just knows it's like a matter of time probably. And it's pretty much comes down to like, if you can beat yourself, and that's where I'm at right now. Like, I still feel like I have it. And I think being a competitor for so long and just, you get a strong head.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's like being arrogant. I just feel like it's being confident. But, you know, it's, I would love to be able to let him go at the start and see if I can chase him down and get by him. That'd be the ultimate. But I don't want to give up that, like, that, you know, I don't make it that risky or that much of a challenge, because I'm still, like, you know, $5,000 to stay in the bank for my tour would be a lot better than losing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't pay myself. I just keep it in there so I can do more things with the with money.
But, no, man. No freebies here. No head starts. I think
the biggest thing, like $5,000, it's definitely, I don't want to be paying that out. But more than that, I don't want to lose, because just the pride and how much, like, that will go around, I think. I got beat. So
you got to stay Banzai Master.
Exactly.
Yeah. What the hell? You can't give up Banzai Master. That's too good of a title.
Yeah, 42 years old now. So,
how old is this kid?
Kyle Coxon, I think he's like 26.
Okay, dude, come on. So, let's keep those 26 year olds in their place.
Yeah, exactly. I've been trying hard, and it's gonna be another fun one this year.
Yeah, cool. Well, Darren, it's gonna be a big weekend for you, and I want to let you get back to getting your head wrapped around everything that you're going to be required to do in a few days here. But it's really fun talking about this stuff. And let's just go over it again. The first Banzai event is this weekend, right?
So you can find all the information on rolfsbanzai.com. Mm-hmm. And it's Kirkwood, February 27th, 28th. And then the next weekend at Sugar Bowl, March 5th and 6th. And prior to those, too, for anybody in town, we're trying to really rally a community. So we're doing these bar crawls, too, and in South Lake Tahoe. We start at 5 o'clock on Friday, the 26th. And we go to this place called Base Camp Pizza, and then the California Burger Company. We've got live music. We're giving, like, a ton of stuff away, like lift tickets to the resorts and sponsor prizes. And you know, Deschutes Brewery is a sponsor, and Red Bull's a sponsor. So we're trying to, like, promote those companies, those brands that are supporting us. And we do the same thing March 4th in Truckee at one of my sponsors and the Banzai sponsors, Tahoe Sports Hub, Ski Shop. Then we go to Mellow Fellow and Pastime, and we got a rowdy cowboy kind of like outlaw band and a punk band there. So it's going to be good times to fire it up. You know, I guess the reason why I started this, it was back in 2011, because I wanted to do something for the snow sports community. I wanted to bring men and women together, ski and snowboard. I wanted to do something that was unique, that wasn't done anywhere else, and just wanted to celebrate, like, good times on the mountains, and that's what we're doing. So thanks for the support, and check it out on Facebook or whatever, chime in, watch our reaction, or make it out as a competitor or a fan, and you'll be blown away what goes down.
Absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to seeing some of the highlights from the events, since I won't be able to be there in person. Good luck with it. I hope it's a great success. And we need to grow this this purest form of racing, as you call it. I like that. Hope you have a great weekend, man. And thanks for talking.
I will, for sure. Make it happen. Okay. All right, Jonathan.
All right, you take care, Darren.
See ya.
Bye bye. That's it for this edition of the Blister Podcast. Thanks to Darren Rolves for the conversation, to our strikingly handsome and sneakily hipster audio engineer Justin Bob, and to New Belgium Brewing Company for sponsoring this episode. Be sure to go to newbelgium.com to check out all of their current beers. Till next time, head over to blisterreview.com to see what we're up to there, subscribe to the Blister Podcast in iTunes, and we'll catch you next week on the Blister Podcast. This episode of the Blister Podcast is presented by New Belgium Brewing Company. No. Jesus. No, none of that. Yep.